Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Shaking all you rugby rant fans, we are back with episode 177, and it'll be a slobber knocker. I will tell you that, because we've got a special man in our midst. We of course have the MLR stats guy with us. That would be James Dealey coming back to punch you in the mouth with some key stats from around the league. So James, first, how the hell are you? It's been a minute. Second, you know, what's new and shaking up in your neck of the woods just north of the border?
Well, thank you for having me back, Rob. It has been a little minute. I took a weekend away back to the motherland to visit some family and everything. But I'm back now. And like you said, I'm going to punch people in the mouth with some stats, whether they want it or not.
Perfect. So you're the man. You're going to get them whether you like them or not. So you better like them.
You're going to listen.
Yeah, you're going to listen. Cool. Weather's looking better up there north of the border. I guess it's all in the eye of the beholder. I'm not a fan of snow, so anytime we get into the summer months up in Canada, it's probably better than the alternative.
No, I agree. It's you're coming into the best time to live up in Toronto, where I am. Suffer through the winter, as I imagine in Chicago you do, for a beautiful summer most of the time.
Yeah, James, I got 4 years, baby. 4 years, and then during the winter I can choose not to see snow. And that's the choice that I'll gladly and happily make, right?
Beautiful.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so we got a great show for everybody on episode 177. And, you know, I love having James on in this particular show. Scott couldn't be with us. He's got some family things to tie up. I can't say it's for the better. We're going to miss you, Scott. We really will. But a reminder for people that don't know, Ty is kind of taking more of a permanent sabbatical with the option of maybe coming back at some point. Nevertheless, I'm hanging with James here, and I always love and appreciate his insight, because he brings the very analytical eyes that only the MLR stats guy can bring. And we've got an interesting topic. We're going to be talking about some comments that Ma'a Nonu, San Diego Legion, spoke about in a podcast called Kickoffs and Kick-Ons podcast back there in the middle of May. It's been one that's simmering, and quite frankly, thank you to Rick Collins. He got his dander, it wouldn't be dander. I guess he got his tendrils of his hairs all stuck up on his neck recently, and want to talk about this one. So we thought we'd bring it forward. So that's the big topic. But before we do that, we're going to come back in just a moment with a little bit from around the pitch. All right. Since James is our esteemed guest today, yes, my absolute pleasure. I'm going to give him an opportunity to talk about and around the pitch and answer the question, what's the deal, yo? So there you go. What's the deal, yo?
Absolutely. So what's the deal? A little section that we do where I just kind of bombard everyone with some milestones that were achieved during the latest round of MLR action. So there were a few, probably a little bit less than usual, but there were still a few big milestones. Lots focused around RFC LA's big win over Miami, unexpectedly big win over Miami. It's a new RFC LA club record for points scored, for tries scored in a single game, for the winning margin. Their previous highest winning margin was 4 points. Now it's 30 after a 45-15 victory over Miami to keep their to keep LA's playoff dreams alive. They still have to go through Utah, which I'm wearing.
Yeah. So real quick on that note, if I hear it right, they came down from a deficit at half and like scored 30 unanswered points.
I think, it was 10-10 at halftime. And then Miami scored to make it 15-10 pretty early in the second half. And then LA just blew away and scored 35 unanswered points. It was really not as close as the first half would let you believe. It was a game of two halves, as the cliche goes. There are still some more milestones that were achieved. Martin Elias from the Dallas Jackals became the first Jackal in history to reach 100 points scored. So they've been in the competition. This is their third season. Had a few rocky years, but now they're starting to look like, what is it I heard on the broadcast for the game? They were the best 5-7 club they've ever seen. Which I think is probably accurate. They've lost most of their games by a handful of points. It's really, really tough on them, but they have picked up their most wins in club history in a season already. So they're, onwards and upwards for the Jackals. The Jackals also, believe it or not, lead MLR in tries scored. They are on 52 now. They were the second team to reach 50 just after the Houston Sabercats, who are on 51 now, but they were the first team to pass 50 tries scored in 2024 and to clinch their playoff spot, first team to actually clinch a playoff spot for the 2024 postseason. On the topic of scoring lots and lots of tries, the NOLA Gold, they only scored one try this weekend, but that was their 300th in club history. They are only the fourth team in league history to reach 300 tries scored. So that was OJ Noah, and that was unfortunately the only try they did score against the Sabercats. But it is still a milestone try nonetheless, and hopefully we'll give the NOLA Gold fans something to smile about.
Well, let me just tell you, they had at least one try stolen away from them, by the way, but that's a matter for discussion.
I think you might be a bit biased there, Rob. Look at that.
Not at all, James. What would give that away?
No idea. but yeah, only the fourth team to reach 300 tries scored. They are actually the only team to not be in the playoffs above. Sorry, they are the only team of the top four to not have played in a playoff game yet. Yet, it's looking good for them so far, but they've played less games than everyone above them, put it that way, in terms of tries scored. And I will keep on the topic of try scored because that's what most of the milestones revolved around. Terangatira Waitokia for Anthem is having a pretty standout season down there. He reached 20 try scored in his MLR career, so he is the 17th player all time to reach 20 tries scored. I think between 17 and I think the leader Dylan Fawcett is still sat on 49, so we're still waiting for that milestone there. But could be sooner than later. And let's see, I think there was one other thing. This is a bit of a weird one, a bit of a weird anomaly that probably points to the fact that now teams are starting to play rugby in the summer, and it's pretty hot if you're playing in Miami, if you're playing in California, if you're playing in New Orleans. The round 14 high for meters gained by a team was 682. Now, without context, that could be a lot, that could be a little. That is the lowest round high from a team's meters gained of the season so far by a long way, by about 70 meters. The previous lowest was 764, set by San Diego last week. So as we see the weather starting to warm up, teams are really struggling to find that running rugby. And I think they're just exhausted playing in the heat at the minute. but we're seeing a lot more kind of closer games. Even the tackle count hasn't really gone up. So it's really just, I think the weather's really starting to affect these teams playing into June and July now.
Yeah, well, you raise an interesting point there, James. And it would be really cool to kind of play this out and watch these statistics just a little bit with more of a keen eye as the remainder of the season progresses on in through the rest of June. And of course, well, you probably get a little better quality of rugby when you get to the playoffs. But nevertheless, you know, our team's tending to kick that high ball more, you know, knowing that the ball is a little bit slippery, knowing that there's more condensation in the air, kick that ball a little higher, put it in the air and make teams, play that kick ball and kind of run it out. And given the fact they're willing to do that, you know, it's putting pressure on teams to kick that ball back and maybe, you know, create more of a tennis effect rather than teams run it out.
We have seen in the last couple of weeks, there's been a few games that have been really, really bogged down with handling. I think there was that Miami and New England game was an absolute swamp over down in Florida. So I would be happy just saying, you guys take the ball, you can mess it up. We'll just sit here. You know, it might change the tactics depending on whether it's rainy or sunny or the temperature and the humidity and everything like that. I think it's one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly know at the Houston NOLA game that was kind of the type of game that was being played in particular in the second half, is there's rain coming down and there was some handling errors, particularly on the gold path. It made that ball particularly hard to deal with. And, it gave some teams some possession and territory advantage for sure. You know, I want to go back. A few stats were interesting. I mean, the Jackals have always felt like one of those teams where you're like, wow, they make me nervous when my team has to face them.
Something I've said with a couple of my friends up here. They are probably the most fun team to watch as a neutral. With having no skin in the game, they are the most fun team to watch because you don't know what's going to happen. Like I mentioned that they've scored the most tries in the league. They've also conceded quite a lot. And all their losses are really, really close. Not all their wins are particularly, you know, one-sided. You know, it's great rugby to watch if you're a neutral. But I get what you're saying in that it's always like I don't know about the Jackals, though. They could upset. Yeah. And it's every single week. Right. They're like, well, they could.
Which team is going to turn up?
Yeah, it is a bit like that. Less so than some teams, I think. Utah Warriors. Which team is going to turn up?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think did the Jackals played San Diego last weekend? Is that right?
The Jackals played. They played New England just this weekend. Gone.
Oh yeah. Okay, sorry, yes. And I think I actually picked them by a narrow margin because New England has had quite a few injuries. I thought, man, maybe that Jackals brand of rugby will turn up on the day. Unfortunately, they came a little bit shy, but they played
It was another one of the Jackals' trademark 3 or 2 point or one point losses.
Right, right, right. And they consequently play Chicago this coming weekend. So I'll get to my nervous Nelly feelings and hair standing in the back of my neck will emerge this weekend as we get closer to the week's end. All right. With that, I'm going to jump into my around the pitch piece that I have prepared. And basically want to talk about USA versus Canada U20s qualifier. Of course, there's a 2-game playoff between Canada and the United States happening right here and right now in the U20s, and all in the potential to play in the World Championships trophy. And right now, the United States has got to get that nod because they won 33-18 and played in Shawinigan, BC. They were down 7-11 in the first half, and then they came roaring back in the second half. Try scored by Caden Crist. Corbin Smith had a brace of tries, Tito Euda, and Houston's own Seth Smith scored. The second match is coming up here June 6th, this coming weekend, at Starlight Stadium in British Columbia. So we wish them all the best. They, of course, have been training up there in Washington to be close to the action as they jump across the border and take on Canada's U-20s. But certainly a good outing from the position of the USA Eagles. And it's, again, one of those things that Scott Lawrence has been wanting to put more money into so that he can prepare our Eagles in the United States in 2027 and more so for 2031. So with that, James, you have some other things that are going on up there north of the border that is worthy of note. Why don't you go ahead and hit us?
Absolutely. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the East Coast Rugby Championship that was taking place in Quebec over the, well, it's been taking place over the, about the last month, but it was the kind of the finals weekend on June 1st, June 2nd. So there were five games in total, two of them two of them for the women and three of them for the men. So there was Quebec West versus Ontario West, and then Ontario East against Quebec East for the women. I'm not sure if the women's side was sort of a one-off or whether they've been playing a little league as well. This was the first I've heard about it, but it was nice to have that festival atmosphere over this weekend in Montreal. And the 2nd of June was the men's side finals, and that was three games, including the Frijax Independence, their academy side, against the Quebec Development for the 5th and 6th place playoffs, the Ontario Blues / Arrows Academy versus the Nova Scotia Celtics for the 3rd and 4th place playoffs, and I know the Arrows Academy did win that quite handily in the end, so they finish 3rd in the rugby, the East Coast Rugby Championship. And then the first and second place playoff, essentially the grand final here, was the Newfoundland or the Rock from Newfoundland against the Rugby Quebec's first side. And I know that the host Rugby Quebec did win that, but I just wanted to give a shout out to Rugby Quebec and all the teams that were involved for a pretty good looking tournament from what I saw. Watched a couple of games up here, and just a shout out to my Arrows, who are still kind of limping on in academy form for finishing 3rd in this competition of 6.
Well, it is good to see the Toronto era still exist in some form or fashion. Hopefully, you know, there can be something more made of that, especially with regard to the MLR. But let's see what happens. But a lot of good quality rugby being played up there in Quebec. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome to see. And even my dog Tucker is excited about it. Just listen to him.
Thank you,
make
Tucker.
All that noise. Yeah, he's pumped. So at any rate, awesome. And it's funny you note the festival atmosphere, because my second around the pitch piece reflects that same tone. So we're talking about just this last weekend, the Chicago Blaze Rugby Club. It is a mecca in the Midwest for a lot of rugby and rugby tournaments. Hosted 8 LAUs, local area union teams, that included both men's and women's sides from Allegheny, Carfu, which is Chicago area, Indiana. A good friend of the show, John Cullen's own Iowa team, and Tim Maupin, I think, is involved with that as well, former NOLA gold player, Michigan's LAU, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Nevertheless, they played up here in Chicago last weekend, covered by Next Level Rugby, so check that out. Thank you to Ryan Ginty for all that you do for this sport. Nevertheless, just want to talk about the Thunderbird Champs. There's a men's cup, women's cup, men's plate, and women's plate. And so here we go. Congratulations to men's cup champion Wisconsin. Carm Consolino is on that team. Again, a NOLA Gold draftee. Good to see him getting, and former Lions player, Chicago Lions player. So good to see that. Women's Cup winner was Minnesota, which is great to see there, eh? So, you know, talk a little bit more like the Canadians up there north of the border. And then you got the men's plate champion is Indiana, and the women's plate champion is Carfu. So a lot of good rugby here at the Chicago Blaze once again. Congratulations to the winner of both the cup and the plate divisions from the men's and women's sides. So there we go. You know, I think it's time to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors before we head out to hear more from them. And I want to mention that, you know, they have some really interesting sales going on. They have Merch Mondays at Shop MLR and at Rugby Now. And I believe, James, can our fans get a discount if they use it?
You absolutely bet they can. If you fancy picking up some of these items on sale, or some of these maybe City Edition kits, they're pretty good.
Ooh, sweet merch coming your way, kids.
Use the code MLRSTATS, all caps, MLRSTATS, at checkout for 15% off your order at Rugby Now.
Hey, listen, fans.
Go get it. Buy stuff.
Yeah, buy stuff, go get it. That is that covers the shipping costs. That's like, that's a little bit better than free shipping. And by the way, speaking of shipping, how fast do people here in the United States get it?
I have no idea.
No, that's right. You live in Canada.
I live in Canada.
Oh, I'm sorry. We get it really fast, just so you know, James.
It takes me a week or two, but I can wait.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, we get it really fast here. So you order like on a Wednesday, you'll have it by game day on Saturday. That's how fast they ship your merch. But they got some great stuff. They've got Canada's Home and Away kit. They got some great stuff on the replica range from, you know, Ireland to Toulouse. Let's see what else they got. The Scotland jersey, Harlequin Saracens, Castre, Queensland Reds, and Wana Pacifica, amongst some other national teams. So check it out. Get your merch. Use MLR stats to get 15% off and get your merch quick. With that, James, we've got a good rant. We're going to come back after we hear a word from our sponsors, and we're going to be talking about Ma Nonu's comments about the MLR and throwing some questions at each other in relation to this. So with that, we'll be back in just a momento.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
All right, we're back. I'm bad. James is rad. And we're ready to rant. And we've got a good rant ahead. We're talking about Ma Nonu's comments in the podcast Kickoffs and Kick-Ons that was reported by Planet Rugby, a publication that comes out of the UK. It was when James and I were talking before in the production meeting. And I was saying that, like, before the proliferation of, you know, online, yes, and I'm that old. Okay, I'm 53, so I knew a time before the internet and Al Gore's creation. That's, you know, political humor for us fans of politics here in the United States. That was the only way that you got to quality rugby pub was through a UK magazine called Planet Rugby. So nevertheless, on May 15th, it was reported Planet Rugby basically – Ma Nonu talked about the MLR, and he said he was asked to compare it to other leagues around the world. Just, you know, what kind of standard is it for those that haven't watched a match, that haven't seen a game, don't have any idea? And he basically said it's amongst, and we know, by the way, that he's played in a lot of different leagues, from Japan and New Zealand, of course, and to, you know, France.
He's an All Black Centurion. He's been around. He's still playing, and he's 42, 43?
Yeah, 41 or 42, yeah. He's been around the pitch. We know that for sure. See what I did there, folks? So nevertheless, he was asked to compare it, and he said that it's at the bottom of the professional leagues. He said the toughest is, of course, the top 14. And James, I think you have some pretty good insight to that. Do you agree with him on that note, by the way?
I think so. I think that it would be the top 14, of which he is obviously familiar. He played with Toulon with Matt Gitto at the time, and after a quick After I thought the sound, the podcast he said this on sounded familiar. It's Matt Gitto's podcast with Drew Mitchell and Adam Ashley Cooper. So it might be a San Diego Legion in there.
You think?
But no, I think he is right. I think the top 14 is probably the best, the highest quality rugby, you know, club league in the world. Internationals aside, obviously, I think the World Cup is the best rugby ever. Or the Six Nations or the Rugby Championship. But
yeah, I was going to ask you. I mean, you've got to be a fan of the Six Nations. And I've listened to The Good, Bad, and the Rugby quite a bit. It's one of my regular listens. And, you know, some would almost say that the Six Nations, with all its history and lore, is almost as good, if not, I don't want to talk about standard because it's international rugby all the same, but it just in terms of the essence, it's one of the best competitions to
watch. The tagline of it is rugby's greatest championship. And I am a huge fan of it. Obviously, I'm English, so I am a big fan of it. I watch it every single year. I watch every single game every single year.
I thought your accent was Canadian.
Well, I am Canadian. That's what it says on my other passport.
Sorry, I interrupted your flow.
But I do love the Six Nations. The tagline is rugby's greatest championship. It's every year, unlike the World Cup, which is every four. I just think that the Six Nations kind of works on a World Cup cycle, as does most of international rugby. So it really kind of culminates in because it's played in February to kind of April time. It culminates in there's that year's competition and then the World Cup. And that's just which we had 2023 last year. That's just one of the best years to be a rugby fan, is a World Cup year when you're also happen to be European or have some dog in the fight for the Six Nations. It's just high quality international rugby all year, pretty much. But those are obviously way above leagues, domestic leagues or club leagues, professional leagues around the world, just because it is the best. You know, it's essentially like a club that has no salary cap. It's just your nationality is the obstacle. And if you've got more players playing rugby, you tend to have a better domestic league, and you tend to have a better international team. That's pretty basic here. So you'll look around and you'll see Super Rugby in the Southern Hemisphere. That's probably up there. There's top 14, obviously. There's the Premiership in the URC and the British Isles and South Africa. Even Japanese League One is probably, well, I'm not sure how that would even compare to like Pro D2. I don't watch a lot of the Japanese league just because of the hours. This is insane. But I think that MLR is a step below, and we know it. I don't think Manonu was trying to kind of say the league.
Yeah, he wasn't being disrespectful. It was an honest assessment.
It wasn't saying like this is rubbish. I hate it here. He's saying, no, listen, it's the Premiership has been professional for 25 years. The MLR has been around 7 years. And even those, we've had some, you know, 2020 doesn't really count. So 2018, even that was just getting started. 2019, you know, we haven't had the conference system for that long. We haven't had that many teams for this long. You know, it's still growing. It's still very, very early. We can't really expect it to immediately come up and say, well, obviously the Shield winner can contest with the Champions Cup winner. You know, that's just silly, which is another thing to touch on. Certain club leagues also have a cup competition. MLR does not have that yet. And I know lots and lots of people have been saying we should have an all MLR versus an all Super Rugby Americas, or a championship of Super Rugby Americas should play, sorry, champions of Super Rugby Americas should play champions of MLR, or have some kind of, you know, let's say, well, it's difficult. Because,
battle for supremacy.
I mean, I think it would be great. It's great for rugby fans. The problem would be there's all kinds of different things about, you know, when MLR contracts run to and all that stuff. And a lot of these players, you know, they tend to play in the MLR in the early part of the year, and then they go to the NPC in New Zealand. That's going to get all complicated if we start to push that. But I do think a cup competition would help to increase the intensity and the quality of it. Because it would be essentially like an international. It would be North America versus South America, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that intrigues me. I think if they did that, just in my humble opinion, they would almost need to be after the MLR season, you know? Yeah. I know that in Europe, both in football as well as rugby, it's very popular to have kind of a competition within competition. Mm-hmm. And the NBA is doing that. And I think for a lot of American fans, and this is just, you know, me as a, you know, stupid American, for a lot of American fans, it's just not something that they're accustomed to. And they don't really understand how that process works. Like, and I simply look to my wife who follows rugby, pays attention to rugby, really enjoyed watching the Bulls, repeat three-peats during the early 90s. And now they're talking about that play or the competition in December, you know, and she's like, what is that? You know? So at putting it at the end, we would get, cause it's, you know, it's all right. We're going to play the two champions at the end. That would make a little bit of sense. So I agree. I think it would be a lot of fun to see that. It would certainly give us a better beat in how we as a, you know, as professional leagues compare with those of South American standards. Mm-hmm. We're certainly seeing the Raptors. They've got some wins under the belt this year, so it shows some promise. I think we could be very competitive, but we know that the way that they structure their teams in Super Rugby Americas is different from the MLR model.
It's very different. It's basically national club size, isn't it, rather than privately owned teams. So right. it would be very, very tricky to orchestrate. And I'm not saying it's not. It wouldn't be. I mean, there's all kinds of things like you were saying, like as the Challenge Cup and Champions Cup, which take place during the season, and it depends on where you finish the previous regular season, whether you qualify for one or the other or neither. All kinds of complicated stuff there. I think the starting point would have to be, like you said, an end of season kind of grudge match against, you know, the champions versus the champions. That's at least a starting point, I think, because without that or something along those lines, it's quite hard to gauge exactly where the quality of MLR is without resorting to international teams. And obviously MLR doesn't only contain US players. So it's hard to gauge the quality of MLR with the USA Eagles. Obviously, there is some influence there, and there will be, you know, as goes one, so does the other. But it's hard to gauge because of all the international input into MLR. Even this season for Canadians, like, we don't have a team anymore. Canadians are a big part of MLR. Look at the Free Jacks championship winning side last year. It was loads of Canadians.
13 or 14 Canadians playing in that championship.
Something like the majority of the squad was Canadian. So, you know, they've won the US domestic league, but it's a Canadian heavy side. Does that mean that Canada are better than the USA? Of course it doesn't. No, definitely not right now. But without playing.
Well, it depends if they play in St. John's Bay or St. John's.
That's good. We'll just play in the Maritimes. It's fine.
Sorry.
Yeah, without having the exposure of an MLR team regularly or MLR teams regularly playing teams from other leagues, it's impossible to say exactly where the quality is. But I do think Nonu is on the right lines. I think it's definitely towards the bottom of the pro leagues. But like the closest comparable we have, as we've mentioned already, is Super Rugby Americas, just because it's sort of on at the same time, it's sort of started around the same time, and we don't play each other.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? All kinds of hurdles to overcome to make that happen. We'll leave that for another day, but it raises some interesting points. And I think it certainly gives us something that potentially down the road in the future, if egos get set aside, could possibly happen. Maybe we'll see. What I thought interesting about his comments, and I wanted to pick your brain on this one, is that he has said in one of his statements that Major League Rugby, the league itself, is supposed to make Americans better. And the reason why I picked this particular piece out was because when the MLR started, the vision was, geez, if we have Americans, and let's just say all North Americans. So when I use that, I'll say North Americans, Canadians, US players, we can make them better, and we can make, therefore, Rugby Canada and the U.S. Eagles better, because their players will be fully professional. That was kind of the thought process, right? If everybody's fully professional, they're getting the SNC, they're getting the training table, they're getting all this stuff, they're in a professional environment, that ultimately that's going to raise the tides of Rugby Canada and the USA Eagles. Yeah. We haven't really seen that at all. If the last World Cup qualification is any indicator. So I guess my question largely that I'm interested in talking to you about, because you have an esteemed rugby mind, mate. I respect it heavily. Is this league, is the MLR making Canadians and Americans, our domestic talent, better?
So I think the knee-jerk reaction is no. And I'm not saying that's true, but that's the knee-jerk reaction because of exactly what you said. Well, neither of them qualified for the World Cup last year. Neither of them. The US by the slimmest of margins, sure, but neither of them qualified. For the first time ever, Canada didn't qualify. So that's an obvious, a really, really obvious, should have been blatantly like flashing red lights, like this isn't working. But I don't think it's that simple. We, at this point...
You mean there's layers to this?
I know, there's nuance to everything. At this point in MLR, the idea is... obviously to get bums in seats, get people watching rugby and to get people playing rugby. If you're getting kids who are 6 years old or, you know, 6, 10, 15, whatever, but as young as under 10 years old playing rugby, they're not going to be playing for the USA or playing professional rugby for 10, 15 years. It's a long-term thing to make rugby a sustainable sport in the USA. I don't think... Well, yes, there are some arguments to be made to say there should have been earlier results, more impactful results earlier on. I don't think it's as obvious, like I said. I really don't think the failure to qualify is a reflection on MLR failing to improve the national teams.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. And you raise some really great points. And I, again, it's your esteemed rugby understanding and knowledge that I like to hear from. And I think you brought it, folks. He brought it. That's why he's on the show and Scott's not today. But nevertheless, I just kidding, Scott. You know, I love you. James loves you too, just a little less than I do. Nevertheless, I it's kind of interesting when I thought about this question. I really like you. It was a knee jerk. Was like, how dare he? You know, maybe he's right given the lack of qualification in 2023 for Rugby Canada in the United States. But I thought a little bit deeper about this, and I guess my thought, I'd be interested in getting your feedback to know whether I'm off base, on base, or somewhere out in space, is we think of it in terms of the Eagles. That's the standard. If the Eagles and Rugby Canada, if those two improve, they're able to qualify, or they're able to win a match, you know, in pool play, or even get out of pool play, then we know the future is looking up and things are good and things are going better. But I guess I would say that's true if that's your standard, but we're talking about North Americans. And so in my mind, the only way the Eagles or Rugby Canada get better and improve is if those players were to play together, as Mano Nu almost suggests, and play at a higher standard, right? If they play better league, they play in a better league, they play better teams, and they always test themselves. That's, of course, why the United States is playing. You know, they're going to play Romania here in Chicago on July 5th. Pretty good level of play. You know, it's right there at that, you know, it should be a quality competition. But then a week later, they play Scotland, and that should be a real test for them, right? Even though they've beaten them once, every squirrel finds a nut. It's going to be a true test to see whether the Eagles can move forward in good stead against a little better quality competition. But that's the only way. If they get consistent competition as an Eagles unit playing against those teams like that, then they can improve. But what about, let's like pick this apart, go to more granular level. North American players, have they gotten better? I guess I would say I'm thinking about guys like Noah Brown, Willis Goodwin from the Hounds, Ross Depperschmidt, my favorite Schmidt in the MLR, William Wegspack, Malcolm May, who's been playing lights out this year for Yep. And guys like Corey Daniel from who 4 years ago was wrestling at the collegiate level. And now he's playing rugby. Guys like Coy Nelligan and William Whiteside, they are getting chances to play at a high level and improving their play because of the MLR.
Regularly, yes, I completely regularly. Agree. Look, I mean, look at obviously he's out of action right now, but Sam Gola is like the poster boy for this. He should be anyway.
Yeah,
picked first overall, had an absolute standout 2023 season, named Rookie of the Year, captain, and named as captain of the Dallas Jackals this season, and he earned a first Eagle cap in between that. Like that is the absolute like, boom, it works. Colin Gross, another one, sort of well. Very similar kind of player to Corey Daniel, if you ask me, but they're both good players, so it doesn't matter. There are plenty of success stories that you can point to. I think that's a result of the pathway system that the MLR teams have put in place. You know, a lot of them are going to be playing. It's only really been the last few years that we've seen MLR academies really kind of become part of the structure of an MLR club. And that's only going to help with things. It means that the teams themselves can really carry a roster of 60 players, and they can have them playing against each other in scrimmages. They can have them playing against other teams. They can have them playing essentially as a development side or a reserve side. And that means there's more players. And that means there's more people. There's more people are going to start to notice this game and start playing rugby. And then they're going to go to universities. They're going to be playing rugby at universities because they saw it when they were growing up and playing for a local side. Then they represent the universities. They're going to be eligible for the draft. The draft would hopefully be growing. It all kind of feeds into this thing, which I think is, yes, it would have been nice to have seen some results at an international level for USA Eagles earlier in this kind of experiment of MLR. Yeah. But it's not the end of the world that we had. Again, what was it? A crazy, ridiculous kick that sent the USA home early. Like,
right.
It was by the thinnest of margins. They didn't even lose that game.
Right. By points differential overall.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I guess, where I was going, right, is that, you know, that measurement that we're talking about for six, that most people use as that, measuring stick for success of both rugby Canada and the United States is that elite side, those 33 players that are playing and trying to qualify for World Cup. I think that we need to give this more time to ripen a little bit in that standard. But if you think about where all the rest of those players that we mentioned, that you mentioned, that I mentioned, where are those players? Those players have risen up.
Yep.
You know, are they being looked at for, you know, the US Eagle pool? Well, I think more are. Seth Smith is a great example, right?
Absolutely.
And a guy like, I think Reese Botha should be a guy that the US Eagles should look at a little bit.
Yeah, he's having some really good games. I'm not sure if it's due to injury at NOLA or what, but he's making the most of it.
Right, and sure he is. And you know, 10 years ago, would we have seen guys like that get these opportunities to show out and put their hands up in some way? I don't know that we would have, and I think that's where, for me, I think that this league has given, has made Americans better, has made Canadians better.
Yeah, and even a little, just an addendum to that, really, is look at the Free Jacks new signings they announced, kind of three signings.
Yeah.
Two of those are US eligible. I think they're both Welsh guys that are realizing, oh, I can come over and I can play rugby in the United States. For whom I'm eligible?
Yeah. Like,
I can represent, I can play at a World Cup is going to be their mindset, is I can play and live in the US in a league, a professional league, and still, you know, do what I love and represent a country of, you know, my parents' birth typically.
Sure. You know, Boney is a great example. You know, Nick McCarthy is a great example. I 100% agree. I think that's a great point that you bring up. I want to talk about one other piece as this conversation evolves a little bit and get your thoughts on this. Ma Nonu later on in the pod talked about the fact that he believes the Eagles should be added to the competition as, you know, that the Eagles should be a team in the MLR. Right. And so I wanted to pick your brain on that. Does Ma just not realize what the Anthem are about, or is he making a plug for what the Anthem, as Scott's vision, should and will become? What's your take on this comment, James?
So I think it is a kind of veil of support for what they're doing and Anthem. Anthem is basically, the whole point of it is develop USA Eagles. And the whole point of it is to, exactly as we've been saying, get some of these guys who would not usually get professional game time to play week in, week out against the best players in or on the continent, including quite a lot of Eagles, current Eagles. Yeah. So you've got essentially some, you know, some are already Eagles on Anthem, but some of them are kind of prospects for the USA Eagles are playing against the current USA Eagles. You can't get much better than that within North America, really. And the Anthem is following the route of Super Rugby Americas, as we mentioned earlier, which is essentially having a national side club. So I think that Ma Nonu is really just saying, I think this needs to happen. And I'm not sure if he means like the USA Eagles, the current USA Eagles, because they would be better than Anthem. I think that's fair to say, because they have a lot of more senior players. But the problem is that all of those players play for other teams. You can't just pick them up and dump them into a single club unless you wait for all of their contracts to expire, which is just stupid. That's not going to work. So that's not possible. You can't put the USA Eagles in as the USA Eagles. So you've got this club side, Anthem. And I made a video on it when we first heard about it back in January, very, very close to the start of the season. Let's ignore that. just saying that don't expect much this year. They've been together. Well, by game one, they'd been together like 3 or 4 weeks. A lot of them had kind of been, I wouldn't say plucked, but they thought they were playing for another team. And then suddenly they ended up playing for this Anthem, which they didn't know existed when they got a contract with this other team. It's very, very strange, very, very rushed, if you ask me. But I do think it's a good thing. Again, the point is to develop USA Eagles. It's not a one-year thing. It's going to be aiming for 2031, with 2027 as sort of a litmus test. So that's a whole four-year window of essentially a national team in MLR, even an eight-year window if you're looking at it as a national team in MLR. As these guys mature from playing pro rugby week in, week out, as I mentioned earlier, they're going to get better. The team is going to get better. And by 2027, it wouldn't surprise me at all that the most of the USA Eagles come from the Anthem.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a veiled attempt, like you said at the top of your rant. I think he's giving a nod towards it. He understands what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, I'm sure Ma Nonu, as a former All Black, has had a few conversations with another former All Black, Olama Aramia, who is the head coach of the Anthem and assistant coach. Yeah. And assistant coach for the US Eagles. So I'm pretty sure that he has a pretty good idea what the vision is there. What I think is interesting is, again, I go back to when the Anthem was just announced, or just prior to be announced, when there were rumblings, rumors, and mutterings. Brandon Sparks, the now GM, and I were friends. He's a hell of a guy and an astute rugby mind in his own right. But he had said to me, he goes, yeah, I'm going to be the GM, and I'm going to gobble up all the USC Eagles I possibly can. Now, of course, it goes back to your point about contracts and the limitations of who is available. But most certainly the way they did it, reaching out to teams and saying, hey, you got to make some guys available. And by the way, we're looking for guys like, well, they picked up Mika Felix from the Hounds. They picked up Jake Turnbull from, I think he was in Seattle, was the last stop. Not and Dylan Fortune plays for the Anthem, if I'm not mistaken. Does he not?
He certainly does.
Yeah. And he's playing for the U-20s currently. Just played last weekend. So, you know, I think we're seeing what this vision is all about. The question of should the Eagles be consolidated isn't really the right question now, is it? It's when will we see a lot of Eagles be consolidated?
Yeah, yeah. And we have to, I mean, we only have to look to the extended list to see that Scott Lawrence does have his eye on everyone, basically everyone, which is good. And I do think that he's going to do a phenomenal job. but I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see it in, you know, November tests and start to see a couple of these names come forward, especially if, you know, guys go down injured, which is unfortunately a part of the game. We're going to see some of these guys come in, get some time, and really, really build to what Scott and what Brandon want to do there, which is win a World Cup for the US on home soil.
Right.
They have a long time to do it.
And yeah, they do. And clearly they have the vision. And before we move away for this and just hit one last topic at the end of the hour here, I did want to mention that what's interesting about all this to me is that as you and I were talking about it, kind of pre-production, we won't see an Anthem team that's made up of 23 U.S. Eagles from the starting 23 of the U.S. Eagles, right? I don't think that's the vision. I think for me, what I think it is let's take this 55-man pool that Scott currently is essentially identified in preparation for the summer test window and potentially for this fall test window that's going to be happening. And I think what we could see is 25 to 30 of those guys eventually, of guys of that ilk, you know, on an Anthem roster, and then the other 25 or 30 that would be smattered throughout the MLR. I think that's a much more likely, you know, vision that's going to materialize by, you know, I don't know about 2027. I think it's going to take a little bit longer to simmer than that. I think we'd probably see that more by 28, 29. Potentially, but that's kind of what I see potentially happening with respect to this.
And I think that is fair. That is fair. And one thing that just occurred to me when you were saying that is, well, if these guys are going to be getting better and better, there's going to be a few more guys that go and play in France or in England or anything like that. You know, they could start their career with Anthem, but then they're so good that they can, you know, that's the dream, right? They're so good that they can go and play in some of these top 14, which I hear is the most competitive league in the world. So says Manonu. And I do agree with him.
Yeah. So all interesting stuff. So I want to move to the last thing. And follow me, folks, if you will. I threw this at James, and I think he kind of looked at me with a crook eye, stink eye, evil eye, and individual eye, one eye, I don't know, covered eye, eye patch eye, I'm not sure which, but I had to kind of walk him through it. And he said, interesting. So just for context, I was listening to some local sports radio and they were talking about the WNBA and the WNBA becoming a lot more popularized now because of Caitlin Clark. Yet, in spite of that, some of those on Chicago's very own team, including Kennedy Carter, gave her some pretty hard fouls and were almost like showing a bit of jealousy towards her. And one of the commentators, Tom Waddle, a receiver in the NFL for the Bears some time ago, said, well, you know, here's the thing. Do they not get that rising tides raise all ships? So in other words, as Caitlin Clark gets more exposure to the league and more tickets are sold because of her popularity, that now, you know, NBC or ESPN or whomever is going to look at that TV contract and say, you know what, it's worth more because there are more eyes on this now. There are more people watching games, and therefore they're going to pay players more. And ultimately, it began to make me think about the MLR, right? If broadcast sponsorship, broadcast deals are what drives salaries up, and we know that that's the ultimate, you know, ultimately the MLR wants to be able to pay the players more so that they can attract more talent and make a better product. My question to you, James, is the streaming of TRN, we love it because it's free. We love it. But is this streaming service making the league and a TV deal less valuable and more difficult to negotiate?
Well, so I think that any TV deal would come with the caveat of you can't do that, the TRN anymore, or come with some kind of pay structure. I think that would be pretty easy to be like, what? No, we want exclusive broadcast rights. That's why we're giving you the money. You have to shut that down, unfortunately. However, I don't think that would be that much of an obstacle for MLR. I think they would probably be like, "Yep, yeah, that's fine," because they don't have they don't have a deal right now. Yeah. They've got yes, there is you know more games than ever on Fox Sport, which is great, but it's not a league-wide deal. It's not every single game. It's not exclusive broadcasting rights because we have TRN. But they don't have anything right now. As soon as they get something, then they can say they can point to it and say, "Look, someone has value in someone believes we have value. We had a TV deal. We have a TV deal." Don't have that right now because the eyes are not on the product. As you said, this whole incident, everyone's been talking about it. Toronto's just been awarded a WNBA franchise for 2026. So that's starting to really pick up here. And this Caitlin Clark phenomenon is absolutely brilliant for the league, and I'm not entirely sure I understand what Kennedy Carter was doing with this, because there's not a downside to it other than she's jealous of the attention, which maybe she is, I don't know. Yeah. But back to MLR, I don't think it's in a position where it's really weakening the chance of a TV deal right now. It's if anything, I think it actually kind of supports the idea that it needs a TV deal. If you can point to how many users are on TRN and say, "Look, these are our broadcasting figures, these are whatever," you can use that to support it and say there's however many X people. Obviously, they're not public. I have no idea. X people watch every single game. X people watch this many games a day or a night, whatever, a week. And use that to essentially create a pitch for a TV deal. I don't think it's ever going to be in a position where it's saying, actually, you know what, we'll keep TRN and turn down a broadcast rights. That's not going to happen. And I don't think it actually really harms. I don't think having a broadcaster as accessible as TRN, where anyone can go on. I have had so many conversations within the last couple of weeks with people online about like saying, "I didn't know this existed. This is such a brilliant resource for people to get into rugby, especially if your city doesn't have a team." The USA is quite big and can be quite far away from teams, so you can pick a team and support them without having to pay any money or anything like that.
And you just visited the UK and obviously have friends and family still there. Is TRN allowing them to pay attention and to watch United States brand of rugby or North American brand of rugby, I should say?
With her. Well, I know I can view MLR games from the United Kingdom. Now, I haven't tried to watch Premiership games, which do have a broadcast deal in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried that, and I'm not there anymore to try it. But I could watch MLR games from there. I know a few people that do support MLR teams from over there. So I don't think, and it would be silly if they were actually, you know, blocking them out or anything like that. If they're letting, I'm in Canada, we don't have a team anymore, I can still view everything just fine. I can even view games that are normally on Fox Sports on TRN.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's the same if you're outside the USA, anywhere, you can watch every single game on the Rugby Network. Nice. Whereas if you're inside the USA, it's actually, you have to watch it on Fox Sports or TRN if it's broadcast.
Right. Yeah. It's delayed by a day, about 24 hours for that national game of the week. Nevertheless, interesting. And I think that's an interesting perspective you bring to the table, of course. The fact that, you know, because they are tracking the statistics, they are tracking the viewership, they are tracking how many people are, you know, for how long they're viewing and watching. Are they watching all match? Are they watching 10 minutes? Are they watching a half? You know, how many people are going back and watching, you know, 24 hours after the match? Because, you know, like for me, I'm both Hounds and Gold fans, sometimes they're playing at the same time and I'm pitch side and not able to watch the Gold. So, you know, do I go, you know, how many people are coming back and watching matches and all that statistics and all those data, all the pieces of data there are good for them to make their case. So all interesting stuff.
And bear in mind, TRN is also based, it's all Globant, right?
Yeah.
Which is a league partner.
Right.
So there's some argument to say there's sort of a broadcast deal in place already. Sort of.
Yeah. Of course.
It's with a league partner, Globant, who run TRN.
Right. But of course, they're on all the shoulders of every jersey in the, yes. in the league. So
not this one, I think. Not this one.
Yeah.
This
is last year. Last year, right. Right. But, you know, again, you know, if anything, that little piece there, whether it's in-kind sponsorship or mm-hmm. whether there's some dollars that are attached to it, it does give a little bit more of a panache or profile when you've got a few extra sponsors on the jersey, so long as they don't get in the way of watching the product. So
yes.
Cool, man. Well, man, I think I picked the right, or I think we picked the right time to talk about this topic when you were available, James, because lightning in a bottle, and you really struck it with all three of our pieces of conversation connected with the league and Ma'a No News comments. But folks, if you fancy an interest in this conversation, don't forget to drop us a line and let us know below. Tell us what you think. Give us your thoughts, because we're always interested in. I got to tell you, let's take it one step further. I'm pretty sure James shares both Scott and I's opinion in regards to we love to get some new and fresh blood in here to get a few more faces on the screen and to get a few more opinions. As a matter of fact, next week we've got a new face joining. I'll leave that one to be a surprise.
Oh,
but it is. Yep. Yep. But indeed, this individual is a follower of one of the Major League Rugby teams and jumped at the chance and said, hey, how do I get into that conversation? I said, well, just hit me up and we can schedule to be on and we'll throw you a topic and you can run with us and join the Rugby Rant. And that holds true for everybody, because again, we are trying to grow rugby one fan at a time. And one of the ways to do that is by engaging you, the fans. So we're trying to do that. I can't say enough about what James does with the MLR stats. It's a great service he does to our community. Again, he's doing his part. He's challenging you. I'm challenging you. The big guy's challenging you to do your part. Come in the Rugby Rant, join us, and have a bit of say in this conversation.
Come and tell us how wrong we are. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear it enough from Scott. I don't mind one more person telling me. So nevertheless, with that, James, it's been an absolute delight, as always, to have you join in the convo. Such an astute rugby mind. I love having you on the show. And let's see if we can make it a little bit more frequent, if possible, if your busy schedule,
absolutely,
as they say,
yeah,
allows you to engage. So, yeah, it'd be great to have you on. Don't forget, support Rugby Now, shop MLR. I think we're going to be seeing some of those beautiful city jerseys coming out. I think we're getting more and more information about, like, H-Town. Why is it that light blue? I think we had our answer today as of the recording. Check it out. But I think those are going to be available on shop MLR. And, of course, you can use MLR stats, all caps, to get your 15% discount. And let him know that you like what James does and what he has to say. A little shout of support to our guy, James Dealey.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
No problem. Once again, I'm Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. That's James Dealey, MLR Stats Man. We're coming to you, episode 177. We hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, catch. Oh, wait a minute. I almost forgot. We have one more bit of
got a buzzer beater here.
Yeah.
The Rugby Rants Lock of the Week.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Of course.
Lock of the Week. That's what happens when Scott isn't here. I don't quite keep the show on track as well as I perhaps need to. So for context, James and I are going to pick our locks of the week, but let me run down the games. The first team in all these is going to be the home team. So just so you know, Old Glory's playing host to New England. We got Houston and LA, San Diego and the Anthem, Miami and NOLA, Dallas playing host to Chicago, and Seattle plays Utah. James, what's your lock of the week, mate?
So I think it's a tough decision, actually, because Old Glory and New England, there's a rivalry there. They both wear the same colors, as the New England fans are so happy to point out. And Old Glory took the first game earlier this season by, I think, a single point. So yes, that could be quite a spicy one.
It could be.
But I think for me, it will probably be the Dog Bowl, Jackals versus the Hounds.
Ooh.
Because I can't remember if it was pre-broadcast or not now, but the Dallas Jackals, they're always in it.
Yep.
They are always in it. And who knows? Chicago are reeling a little bit, so we'll see if they can steady the ship. But I think that will be a cracker.
Yes, I agree. I think that is going to be a spicy one as well. Nevertheless, yeah, it's going to be a good matchup. I was actually going to pick that, but I'm a big fan of spreading around the wealth to some of the matches. And I'm going to say Nola bounces back this week from that loss to Houston, and they're going to pull one over on Miami. Remember, Miami put 55 points on Nola last time in the gold mine. I think Nola is going to want to extract some revenge. They just got to stay out of the penalty box, and they would be a little better off. So
that's another revenge game.
I
think Nola will not take it easy on Miami.
No, agreed.
They both need to bounce back. They got pretty caned last week.
They do. So with that, I think now we're good. Now we're ready to, to shut the show down for real. I'm not faking it. I'm not throwing any dummies here, folks. We're ready to shut the show down. But once again, we appreciate you guys watching. And again, drop us a line, tell us what you think. And let us know if you want to join the show. I'm Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. That's the MLR Stats Guy, James Dealey. And we will see you all at the next.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.